Jayaratamadava Kunjabihari Gopi Janna Balava Girivaradari. Yashoda Nanna Praja Janna Ranjana Yashoda Nanna Praja Janna Ranjana Jamuna Tira Banna Chari Jamuna Tira Banna Chari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janna Balava Girivada Dari Yashoda Nanna Praja Janna Ranjana Yashoda Nanna Praja Janna Ranjana Jamuna Tira Banna Chari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Radha Chamba Sundara Radhe Jaya Radhe Sham Radhe Sham Radhe Sham Jaya Radhe Sham Jaya Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram, Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram. Jaya Gaura Nita, Jaya Gaura Nita, Gaura Nita, Jaya Gaura Nita. Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Vishnu Prabhupada, Paramahansa Parva Chakrachai, Asa Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Shishamaya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Ananta Kota Vaishnavi Ki Jai. Namachari Shila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shigo Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pravuna Chananda Shri Adwaita Garadha Shri Vasudha Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. All glories to the Sum of Devotees. All glories to the Sum of Devotees. All glories to the Sum of Devotees. Glory to Shri Krishna Sankirtan. Gaur Panim Ki Jai. Text 26. This is the pregnancy of Diti in the evening. Na yascha loke swajanak parova. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nayasya Loke Swajanak Parova. Natyatrito nota kaschid vigaryaha. Vayam vratar yachcharana pavidham. Asham same jambata bukta bogam. Please chant. Nah, never. Yesya. Of whom? Loke. In the world. Swajanaha. Kinsman. Paraha. Unconnected. Va. Nor. Na. Neither. Ati. Greater. Adritaha. Favorable. Na. Not. Uta. Or. Kaschit, anyone. Vigaryaha, criminal. Vayam, we. Ratai, by vows. Yat, whose. Charana, feet. Apavitam, rejected. Asham smehe, respectfully worship. Ajam, Mahaprasad, Bata, certainly, Bukta Bogam, remnants of foodstuff. Translation, purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Shiva regards no one as his relative, yet there is no one who is not connected with him. He does not regard anyone as favorable or abominable. We respectfully worship the remnants of his foodstuff, and we vow to accept what is rejected by him. Purport. Kashyapa informed his wife that just because Lord Shiva happened to be his brother-in-law, that should not encourage her in her offense towards him. Kashyapa warned her that actually Lord Shiva is not connected with anyone, nor is anyone his enemy. Since he is one of the three controllers of the universal affairs, he's equal to everyone. His greatness is incomparable because he is a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is said that among all the devotees of the Personality of Godhead, Lord Shiva is the greatest. Thus, the remnants of foodstuff left by him are accepted by other devotees as Mahaprasad, or great spiritual foodstuff. The remnants of foodstuff offered to Lord Krishna are called prasad, but when the same prasad is eaten by a great devotee like Lord Shiva, it is called Mahaprasad. Lord Shiva is so great that he does not care for the material prosperity for which every one of us is so eager. Parvati, who is the powerful material nature personified, is under his full control as his wife, yet he does not use her even to build a residential house. He prefers to remain without shelter, and his great wife also agrees to live with him humbly. People in general worship Goddess Durga, the wife of Lord Shiva, for material prosperity, but Lord Shiva engages her in his service without material desire. He simply advises his great wife that of all kinds of worship, the worship of Vishnu is the highest, and greater than that is the worship of a great devotee or anything in relation with Vishnu. We've been hearing a lot about Lord Shiva lately. Chaturatma gave a wonderful class, and of course we had Shivratri, and then many of these verses in this chapter about this greatest of the Vaishnavas, Lord Shiva. And here it's accentuating a little bit about his renouncement, how he doesn't really have a residence of his own, and also how he's very much unattached to family and the rest. He's not really attached to that those type things that we are so bound to. And it's also describing Parvati, his wife, how humbly she's subordinate to him. And she's also living, I don't know if she lives in the crematorium with him, but I can't imagine that. But anyway, it looks like sometimes they live under trees. It's pretty austere, especially for the supreme goddess of the whole material energy. She could have anything she wanted. Although sometimes she gets a little upset with her circumstance. Remember the Daksha incident when she got this bug in her bonnet that she wanted to go to this big celebration, a big whoop-de-doo, and with all the demigods at her father's house, and she was just determined to go. And even though Lord Shiva said, don't go, there's going to be some offenses, and it's not going to be a good thing, she went anyway, one time when she was not submissive, and it ended up to be a disaster. Although it proved that she was very much attached to her husband in the way that when he was offended by her father, she just burned herself up. She just couldn't take it. So interesting couple. And here we see that of his greatest qualities is that he's very stuck on this worship of Lord Vishnu. He practices what he preaches. He's always in meditation. He imagined just always meditating on Krishna, sitting there in the crematorium meditating on Krishna. And then he's also preaches about Krishna. He's preaching to his wife that you should worship the devotee of the devotee of Krishna. This is the best thing to do. So he's a wonderful personality. And he's worshipped in the Mahabharata by demons and devotees alike. There's so many demons that worship him for special benefits. And then amongst the one devotee that I think of that worships him is Gandhari. She's great, great Vaishnava, great devotee. And she worships also Lord Shiva. Of course, many of these are a little bit tinged with, you know, gimme, gimme, you know, I need a little something here, a little something there. But he is very renowned and worshipped by millions and millions of people today. But overall, his character is a little unpredictable. Sometimes he even chooses to fight his devotees, or even he serves. Sometimes he fights Krishna, and this is interesting story that once Arjuna was recommended by the other Pandavas that they needed some extra weapons, and so therefore, because they were in exile and things like this, and they had a lot to worry about, and so Arjuna was recommended to go and worship Lord Shiva to get the special weapon that could save them all from everything. And so he did. He went and he meditated and he fasted. Fasted for so many days, for months he fasted. Can you imagine? I mean, just thinking about fasting all day for Lord Chaitanya's appearance day is like, it's so difficult. But for many months he fasted and worshipped Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva recognized him, but he said, I'm going to test this Arjuna. I'm just going to see if he's really the great person that Krishna says he is. So he sent a boar in to, a real wild boar into where Arjuna was meditating. And Arjuna saw this is some danger, and he took his bow and shot an arrow and shot the boar. And so he ran over and to check and see on this animal, and he noticed that there was another arrow in the boar, and all of a sudden pops up this hunter, very strange looking hunter, and said, "Oh, I was the first one to kill this boar. This is my arrow. I killed this boar." And then the whole argument ensued, and Arjuna got very very angry. He said, "Okay, well we'll see who's the greatest archer. Who really did this? Who really killed this animal? I'm better than you." And so they ended up fighting each other, and this went on for quite a while, and finally Arjuna goes, "This, I'm not getting anywhere. It's not possible to defeat this person. Who is this?" And so finally he just drops his bow and surrenders to the hunter, who is Lord Shiva in disguise. And of course Lord Shiva says, "Yes, you passed my test," and he gives him the weapon of the Pasupati weapon, which he said, "Please don't use this unless, it's absolutely necessary, because it's can annihilate everything." Lord Shiva does have some anger running through his blood. He's born from the anger of Lord Brahma, so he sometimes gets a little angry. There's another story of Aniruddha, the grandson of Lord Krishna, was flirting and associating with Usha, the daughter of Banasura, a great demon who had 1,000 arms. And he caught them in the act of being together illegitimately. And he captured him, and it got word to Lord Krishna that, this your grandson is being caught. And so he got very angry, and he said, release him. This is crazy. And he said, if not, I'm gonna come and deal with it myself. So he gathered up the armies of the Yadus and went there, and demanded that he be released. But Banasura, being a demon, was very angry, and so he said, "No, we're going to fight this out." And so. There was a previous time when Lord Shiva was had become friends with Banasura. Banasura had done some service for him, and he was very pleased. And he was told him that he would help guard his kingdom. And so he took the side of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva took the side of Banasura. And so when the fight happened, Lord Shiva ended up on the battling with Lord Krishna. And this was, of course, quite the fight. All kinds of weapons occurred from that. I think there was a mountain weapon, a water weapon, a yawning weapon. Shiva had a special weapon, and then the Narayana Astra came, and finally Lord Shiva just said, "Okay, I'm defeated." And then Banasura was captured, but he was released. He was spared his life. And then, of course, a big marriage came about. So, yes, it's best to stay on the side of Lord, stay away from Lord Shiva in some regards, but we know that he's very easily pleased and very easily displeased. But he's also known as the Lord of Destruction. He uses that anger in the service of doing, annihilating the whole universe, which is not the greatest service to do, but necessary. And I looked up, Lord, different kinds of gods that are also were worshipped in the Greeks and the Romans that were part of lords of destruction and death. And Lord Shiva was there. It was actually his picture was there as also equal to the same position of death and destruction. And we see that these Greek gods, they were so many demigods. Many of them had to do with the water, because of course Greece is all over the all peninsulas and islands. And they had many gods, and some of them were part of the destruction. And actually, some of these other gods, I think it was in this, up in the north, in the Sweden or somewhere like that, they actually, the god of destruction had snakes all over him, just like Lord Shiva. So some similarity. But the Greek gods, they were more or less entertainment, hearing the stories of them, and became epics, poems were written about them. And they, but now you don't hear of them anymore. They're not worshipped, they're gone. The Romans, they took the Greek gods, reshaped them, and they worshipped them, but they had them more within their part of their lives. They honored them as caretakers of the material and spiritual activities. But they're also gone, not worshipped today. But Lord Shiva, since time immemorial, since the creation, Lord Shiva is worshipped. Hundreds of temples, huge temples, some of the biggest temples in India, Lord Shiva is still worshipped. They're packed on special holy days. So we can see the importance of this great personality. He commands all respect by us. Some, of course, fear him. He's a pretty fearful fellow. And some pray to him for benedictions. And then there's others that just keep their distance, pay their respect, and worship him in their own way. We adore him, of course, as the Gopeshwar, as the protector of the Dham. A very nice temple in Vrindavan. You can go see him with a little, usually have a little shawl over his head like a gopi. And it's always very, very packed there. People worship and do abhishek all, I think it happens like all day long. I'm not sure, but in the course, we worship him as the greatest Vaishnav. And of course, the hippies, they worshiped him, right? That maybe they still do, because he's such a cool character like themselves. You know, Lord, the guru of Ganja, and he has dreadlocks, and he's half naked, and he's renounced. He doesn't live anywhere. So this is like, you know, he kind of fits into their position. But they don't really understand his position, his power that they have. They're very ignorant of what these demigods are like. Even ourselves, we can't imagine a demigod, how powerful they are. These are divine souls that have used to come here on this planet. They actually used to come and associate with the different people that were worshiping them. But now they don't come here, Papa said, even to pass urine. They don't even come here for that. They don't want to mess with these degraded souls that are so self-centered, that think that they're so great. But they did used to come here. And I went to Angkor Wat and visited the temples there. And the temples, there's so many temples for so many of these demigods. And you have to take a motorcycle. It's a long way. It's a huge, miles and miles and miles. It's a whole city of the Khmer dynasty. This king heard of the Vedic culture, and he built like a whole dynasty, and built all these different temples to worship the demigods because he realized that they were great. He must have been a very humble person just to hear about it and then to want to worship. Most of us don't want to worship anybody. But you when you go to the temples there, there's one, the main temple, which is described as Mount Meru, and it's Sariputta Prabhu told us how it was made exactly in the same measurements as the whole universe is described in the Bhagavatam. It's a really amazing place to visit. And so there they have this big walkways where they used to actually have elephants parading, and you can just picture the whole worship going on. This was a little over 1,000 years ago, and I'm sure the demigods came there. You just felt it, like the demigods must have come there because they were being worshipped. But now, you know, why come there? Why come here? You know, think no one is greater than ourselves. And it's true, we all have this thick false ego. Even the biggest chainsaw cannot slice through it, you know, especially in the West. It's just so thick from past, you know, thinking that, oh, I was the greatest roach, I was the most wonderful tree, I was the most wonderful everything, the biggest bozo clown we could possibly be, you know. And we still think this way, so why come here? It's austerity for someone to go to church one day a week and, you know, put their hands together and bow. Well, let's put their head on the floor. So this is something that we're lacking here in the West is our humility and in to be respectful to others. So therefore, we are fortunate that we have come in contact with Srila Prabhupada, who's telling us about all these great personalities whom we wish we had just one little teeny tiny little speck of their greatness. But Prabhupada is so kind that we can get the mercy of the Supreme Lord in the form of prasadam. Here's describing the potency of prasadam. I know when I first came to the movement, we called Prabhupada's prasadam maha maha prasadam. So here's describing prasadam, and then maha prasadam is from the Lord's remnants, and then you get maha maha prasadam when the devotees take that prasadam. So we used to always scramble after it. The poor person who got Prabhupada's plate in L.A., they would be carrying it and get, you know, ambushed. We have many, many stories of that, of how that happens. But there's also a very nice story that has to do with Lord Shiva about Mahaprasadam. And this is when Narada Muni, he was doing some service for Mother Lakshmi, and she was very pleased by his service and said, you know, I can give you whatever you want. Take a boon. What would you like? What would you like? And he goes, I don't need anything. He goes, oh, but actually, I would like the Mahaprasadam for Lord Narayan. And all of a sudden, she got this, like, face that was like, oh, no. Like, she was, like, total anxiety. She said, oh, well, I can't do that. But anything you want, you know, anything you want. And he goes, but you promised whatever I want. So he was like putting the, you know, the tightness on it. And she goes, well, actually, just today, the Lord was telling me that no, you have to promise me that no one gets my prasadam after I'm done. And so she said, oh, yes, for sure, Lord. And so he was very firm on this. And so just that day, now Narada Muni is putting her on the spot, saying, I just want the Mahaprasadam. And she goes, well, okay, just wait a few minutes. And so it was lunchtime, and she went to serve the Lord. And he could tell by her countenance that something wasn't quite right. She was upset about something. And finally he asked her, you know, what, you look disturbed. And she said, well, actually, you know, your great devotee Narada Muni is here, and he could have a boon, and he asked for your Mahaprasadam, and you just told me that I can't do that. And he goes, yes, that's right. And then, he thought, well, Narada Muni is such a great devotee, and we can make a little, I can see you're upset, so we'll make a little compromise today, and that you can give him some of the Mahaprasad, but I can't see you take it from me. So she figured out somehow or other, she got it without him looking, and she took it and gave a nice big plate of Mahaprasad to Narada Muni. He was total bliss. Totally. And we hear how, when he hears the holy name, sometimes he stretches, and because he's in ecstasy, and his Brahma thread breaks. Well, I'm sure it broke this time too. But he's going all over the universe and telling everybody the glories of Mahaprasadam, how he tasted this prasadam. It was so wonderful. And he even goes all the way to Kailash. And he arrives there, he's singing and dancing, spinning around, doing flips in the air in such happiness, having had this prasadam. And Lord Shiva sees and says, oh, Narada Muni, you look so blissful today. I mean, you're always blissful, but you look really blissful today. What's going on? And he says, well, actually, I just got Mahaprasadam from Lord Narayan, from Lord Vishnu. And Lord Shiva goes, oh, you're so fortunate, so wonderful. So, do you have some for me? And Narada Muni goes, oh, now I'm put on the spot. And he bows his head and he looks, and in his fingernail is a little teeny bit of prasadam, little teeny speck of prasadam on the fingernail. He goes, oh, yes, I do, I have some. And he takes it and he puts it in the mouth of Lord Shiva. And the minute Lord Shiva tastes that prasadam, he starts shaking and the whole world starts shaking, and he's starting to play and dance like the time of dissolution. And he's just like total ecstasy that he's gotten this prasadam. And then Parvati, she gets up, what's going on? You can't be dancing like this. It's not time yet. It's not time for the devastation of the universe. And so she goes, what's going on? Because I just had some Mahaprasadam from Lord Vishnu. And so she goes, so did you save some for me? And he goes, oh my gosh, now I'm put on the spot. And she starts to get angry. You can imagine the material energy personified starts getting burning angry, starts to burn everything. And all the demigods and Lord Brahma and everybody get upset. And Lord Brahma has to go to Lord Brahma to see what can be done, because she's a pretty powerful lady. And the whole universe could be devastated also. And so Lord Brahma arrives, and Lord Vishnu hears the story of what's been going on, that Parvati didn't get any Mahaprasadam. And he goes, okay, call Garuda. We'll take some prasadam. We'll take prasadam, whatever. They fly to where Parvati is. And Lord Krishna goes, here's, just calm down. Here's some nice prasadam. And he gives the prasadam. She goes, no, not just me, not just Lord Shiva. Everyone should have your mercy. Everyone, they're all your children. How can you not give mercy to everybody? And so he goes, okay, in that case, to satisfy you, I will go to Nilachala, and I will reside there in the temple, and I promise that whoever comes can have prasadam, no matter, regardless of, completely equal to everyone, children, dogs, everyone can have Mahaprasadam. And you, your name will be Bimala, and there'll be a temple for you behind me in the compound. And you will, it'll be honored to you first, and then to me. So, and then Lord Shiva, well, because he didn't give you any prasadam, he can have a temple behind, outside the compound. And so today in Jagannath Puri, there's always plenty of prasadam. You can go around, and everyone can take Mahaprasadam. So this is some of the power of prasadam, and I'm sure we all have our own stories of, of ambushing and raiding Mahaprasadam. I can tell you it's very difficult. One time I stole prasadam, it was the morning Mangal Aarti, which is heavily guarded by one devotee over here. And now she realized that I took some, and so now before I can even get in there, she hides the thing, the container that's, you can never find it, you know? Still looking for that thing. And very, very difficult around here to get Mahaprasadam. And you have to know exactly at 12:15 when one of the servants of the deities comes out for the noon prasadam, then you can sometimes get some. But we all have our stories, and I love that story about, I think it was, can't remember who it was, maybe it was Nandarani that said that everyone was bugging her for Prabhupada's prasadam, and Prabhupada said, just mix it all together. And then, okay, yeah, and then then people came to take it and go, well, well, that's okay. And so that's, we can see that we don't really have the proper etiquette sometimes. I know, I don't know if it happened in any of the temples you were at, but with the very first temple I went to in Boulder, Colorado, there was one very eccentric lady devotee there, a brand new, you know, brand new, 2 weeks, and not a few days in the movement, and it becomes a Sunday feast, and all these, you know, hippies come packed with all kinds of people in Boulder. Boulder was like a center of spiritual, you know, seekers. And they all came and took the Sunday feast. And every Sunday feast, she would say, you know, we can't disrespect Mahaprasadam. We can't disrespect prasadam. So all the plates, all the leftovers, we had to eat all the leftovers of all the plates of all the people. I remember going in there trying to take the laddus and the little bit of halva. It was really, it was very austere. But she was, you know, set on it. That didn't last too long, though. And so we have to improve our respect for prasadam. The two programs that Prabhupada gave us are kirtan and, you know, the Sunday feast and prasadam. So we have to realize the mercy that he has given us. It has contributed to us all becoming devotees and probably keeping us devotees is the kirtan and prasadam, very important secret weapons that kill our attachment. Ultimately, hopefully, killing our attachment to this material world and to our attachment to family and the rest. Diti here is overcome with her self-interest, and therefore she's losing her respect and gratitude for her for Lord Shiva. So he's being warned by her husband, don't go that direction. You have to remain very respectful. And so we should learn that too, that in the West we don't really learn, we aren't educated in respect very much, but even to our elders. I know that, you know, being respect to elders is now a little passé, it's a little, you know, not so obvious. I notice that young children, that they're encouraged to grow up very quickly so that they don't have to be subordinate to anybody. I see them being rushed through childhood. They don't even have a childhood these days, you know? Almost no years where they were just like, yes, mom, yes, yes, or whatever you say. No, they're forced to become adults, you know, become grown up. And it's a shame because it's very important to be raised looking up to somebody for quite a while, so we realize that there are people up there that are much greater than ourselves. I know I was raised to look down on everybody. If they weren't Caucasian, if they weren't, you know, upper middle class, if they weren't in our country club, they were down there. We were up here. So it's a disease that is very detrimental to our false ego disease. So luckily, Srila Prabhupada has brought the Veda culture, which is very rich. As you see here, he's being very firm. Very rich that one be respectful and especially recognize these divine souls like Lord Shiva as so much greater than ourselves and learn to pay our obeisances. And that will make us happy. Bowing our heads makes us happy. not putting our nose in the air. So these are some of the things. If anybody has anything they'd like to contribute or any questions. Yes, Rebecca.
I don't know if everyone knows this, but in Mayapur, after they offer the boga to Radha Madhava, they take the plate and bring it into the pujari room where there's a bust of Lord Shiva and offer it to him before it's distributed.
Nice.
All the time while I was there, 2005, we were there, and yeah. Well, speaking of the power of prasadam, that might have been the thing that grabbed me. When I went to the first Sunday feast I went to, I was on a macrobiotic diet, and when I ate that feast, I was sitting with this devotee Gandharvika, and she didn't finish everything on her plate, so I ate everything off of my plate and her plate, what she remained. And then when everyone in the gallery were called to another part of the temple, there were plates left on the floor, so I just scraped up every bit of prasadam I could see. Like, I just arrived home, you know, home cooking.
Yeah, we were encouraged to eat a lot of prasadam. I know that I was in Texas somewhere, and Vishnujan Maharaj was there with a bunch of brahmacharis, and he was traveling around, and I happened to go by. It was right after Mangal Arati, and this boy was sitting there with a mound of Malpura, strawberry Malpura, just eating it, and Vishnujan Maharaj was, you know, yeah, let him take prasadam, no problem.
On one side, the demigods don't feel like to come, but another side, demigods are praying to come to these 10,000 years.
Yeah, to be born.
There's a famous verse in 11th canto, 5th chapter, 36, 37, 38, all these four verses. Talks about Kali Sabha Jayanti Arja Gunagga Sarabhagina Jatra Sankirtana Iva Sarva Sarta Dovilabhate. You can get anything you want in this golden age. Please, my Lord, we are stuck as a demigod. Can we just take a birth as a human being? Mm. No human being should complain about their life. It's a commentary of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, that they can get anything they want, ultimate goal, love of God, that they can get it. Why they even complain about their life, just tiny little life, 100 years to them is nothing, but to us is like a big deal. So if we can think of the positive. And Narottam Das Thakur also he composed a song. He is paying obeisances to Kali Yuga, this golden age. Pranamaha Kali Yuga Sarva Yuga Sar. So we should always focus on the positive side. Yeah, negative side is there, but positive side.
And we should be very grateful to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu,
yes,
because
yes,
he has given us Radha Krishna Prem, which was unheard of.
Correct. Also Srila Prabhupada, even though Mahaprabhu came, but if it was not Prabhupada, even for myself, you know, personally, honestly, I grew up going with my mother to Gauriya Math. They are nice, but Prabhupada created a mission movement vibrating like you go to Mayapur, you cannot escape without taking a book or anything. That was not there.
Hare Bol, very nice class, Didi. But I remember, I can't remember which year it was, but I went to preaching with Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj to Egypt and Israel. And while we were in Egypt, we had a chance to visit the pyramids in Giza. And speaking to the Egyptian, in Egypt, yeah. Speaking to the person there, they were saying that the actual name of the pyramid is Meru. Mm. Yeah, the actual name of pyramid in the language is Meru. They said the Greek name is pyramid because the Egyptians, when they came, they saw Agnihotras being done in the middle, so pyramase means fire in the middle. So when you go into the pyramid in Giza, you have to bow down because the entryway is such a way that unless you're very short, you have to kind of bend over. Then you can come up in the middle and it's open, and then along the walls are all the, they call it Merenektar, but it's hieroglyphics, we say in academia. But at the very top, there's a black stone that caps the top of the pyramid. So he asked about the stone. He said that all they know is the geological name of it is ammonite. Of course, the geological name of shalagrams are ammonite. Yeah. So very, very interesting things. One other thing is I went to the Brooklyn Temple in 1972, and I was there with a friend, and we had the Sunday feast. And that was the first time I saw they had halva, sweet rice, and the strawberry malpur all in the same sitting. You know, so we were thinking, well, you know, this is kind of elaborate because we thought they were monks, you know. So he said, well, you should come during the week for the austere part. This is a special day. Yeah. What was the Sunday feast?
I had a hard time with prasadam during the week. It was, they didn't know how to cook. They didn't even know how to make chapatis. They just put the dough in the oven and it got hard as rocks, you know, just used to call them bullets, you know. Anyway. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.